You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This is Colin Moriarty. That's Scott Lowe. I thought you might say hello or something.
I didn't know.
That was just why I was so scared. But that's Scott Lowe. You don't have to say anything. Or you can. And that's Brian McCaffrey.
Hello.
It seems like the first next generation console will be announced on February 20th.
Yes.
Sony, I thought the Wii U maybe. Came out already. I'm kidding, folks.
Sony sent out a save the date yesterday for February 20th. There's an event happening in New York City.
They're getting married.
See, yeah, Sony is getting married.
Yeah, it's a Microsoft.
Sony says we'll be able to see the future. We reached out for comment. Sony said this event is about the future of the PlayStation business.
Yeah, strange little thing to say, but okay.
So yeah, we think they're going to announce the next PlayStation.
New Vita color?
Yeah. I hope it's something like that. I hope it's the new Vita.
It really is not actually the PS4.
No, I just think that would be just ridiculous.
It would be the biggest disappointment of all time.
Yeah, so yesterday, like 3 or 4 in the afternoon, on Twitter, on Facebook, on PlayStation blog, etc., they sent out this blast about the future. It leads you to this website with a kind of a cryptic video showing off the face button logos. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, we got emails. Some of us got emails all around the industry to sign up. It's not even to save the day. It's like you have to submit your credentials and sign up. February 20th in New York City. I'll be there with Greg. Scott will be there. I think Keza from the UK is also coming over.
Too bad. I would love to go to get the perspective.
I'd love to have you.
Maybe I'll be invited.
We might be able to arrange that. It's exciting because this must be it. I mean, you have to assume that this is it.
So what happened to letting Microsoft go first? Didn't they just say recently that they...
Head fake. I mean, it has to be like just them just, head faking.
Colin and I were talking about this earlier. Like, there's no way that they could be that reactionary. Like, there's no way you could just put together like a massive event in a coordinated media campaign at the last minute just because your competitor like announced their date. So like,
and if you do, you're coming from a really bad place.
Yeah, it's a recipe for failure and disaster. So these dates are obviously set in stone by now. So I think, Colin's absolutely right. It was a head fake. Or maybe they had information that Microsoft was going to do it sooner, and they just couldn't wait. Who knows? But I think that was a total head fake.
So they put out this teaser video. It's like 44 seconds long, I think. Someone in the office made the observation. I forget who it was, but they were like, "Well, they should have put that during the Super Bowl this weekend, right?"
Maybe they didn't want to spend the money, frankly. I mean, $4 million for an ad during the
Super
Bowl
is an
this
issue
year.
For Sony.
Yeah, I mean, another good point, too, is that the God of War ad that we wrote about that they were teasing, the live-action one, is being shown during the Super Bowl on the internet only. Like, kind of, so if they're not
what?
Like, so, like, yeah, like, it's like...
it's not really a Super Bowl
No,
commercial.
it's like during, like, CBS's post-game stream online. It's something like that, so... yeah, so it doesn't seem like they're loath to spend money.
Yeah.
But... You know, it would have been cool, but at the same time, they're not ready to show anything yet. This is to get nerds like us excited.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone, I wouldn't say anyone, but I don't think a lot of people watching the Super Bowl are going to walk away from that app being, like, super stoked.
They probably wouldn't even know what it means.
Yeah.
They probably think it's just a commercial, a general PlayStation commercial.
Although there's the ultimate counter move from Microsoft is, oh, we have a Super Bowl ad. We're teasing really our good. Xbox yeah. on the Super Bowl.
I mean, the thing about the Super Bowl is, like, the signal to, like, noise ratio is so high. You've got so much noise happening all at once. Everyone's, like, teasing their new movie or new game or, you know, whatever, like... Why not do it on your own and, like, make your own splash? And regardless of, like, Sony's, like, overall, like, global financial dire straits that they're in right now, like, if they talk about the PlayStation, people will stop and listen from all walks of, you know, the industry. Like, it's one of those things, like, you can't help but, like, get a ton of attention regardless of what you do or what venue you do it on.
Is it going to be called the PlayStation 4?
Yeah, I think it will be. I mean, my guess for a very long time was that it would be called PlayStation. But what indicates that it'll be called PlayStation 4, I think, is actually the Quantic Dream story from last week.
The domain name.
Yeah, the domain name Singularity PS4, and they got the domain name Heavy Rain PS3 and Beyond PS3, so this is their style, and so I think that that's actually basically proof that it's going to be called PlayStation 4.
So you think if it weren't called PlayStation 4, it would have just been SingularityPS.com?
Yeah, maybe, unless, because you have to assume, even though Quantic Dream's not owned by Sony, they have a very close relationship with them, they know what it's called.
But isn't it still possible that they just registered that domain? I mean, that's, you know, possibly. PS4 is just sort of the colloquial code name that it could still be PlayStation.
But I think you could be right, except for the fact that they haven't even announced that the game exists yet, and by the time that the console's announced and stuff like that, it would make no sense at that point to call it PS4. That would actually cause brand recognition issues, I think. Yeah. So my guess for a very long time was actually wrong.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's, you know, it could go either way, like Ryan said. Like, you know, there is, you know, for, like, web search nerdetry, like, here, like, if it's probably the most searched term is, like, PlayStation 4. Like, people aren't probably searching for Orbis or, like, even for, like, the first year of the console, like, what it's actually called. A lot of people will still be searching for PlayStation 4. But that said, like, it seems like it would be weird for them to completely abandon that brand recognition of, like, PlayStation number. Like, you know, it would totally disrupt the naming conventions that they've used, and as we've seen with the PlayStation Vita, kind of causes some confusion. So, I mean, like, to go rogue and, like, throw out, like, random, you know, new titles, so.
So if the PS4 is announced on February 20th, when is the new Xbox announced?
I think we're looking at within 30 days, because... We're going to have GDC coming up, it comes down more to, as soon as the cat's out of the bag on PS4 on February 20th, developers are finally going to start talking about their PS4 games, / next-gen games. And so I don't think it's going to serve Microsoft to have people talking only about PS4 games and, maybe other platforms as well. It's, you know, they'd really just be sort of handing the full spotlight to Sony. So I think within 30 days before GDC, which this year is actually a little later than it usually is, it's at the very, very end of March. So I think within that 30-day time frame between February 20th and March 26th, I believe it is, for GDC, probably mid-March if I had to put a guess on it.
Yeah, getting into some, like, tech nerd stuff. Like,
let's do it.
You know, the rumors are that these two consoles are going to be based on the exact same, you know, brand and architecture of chips. So, like, you know, these next-gen titles are presumably going to be, of the cross-platform ones, are going to be, like, seamlessly kind of developed at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Ryan said, like, if developers start talking about PlayStation 4, they're only going to, by association, let stuff slip about the next Xbox. So, you know, if Microsoft is smart, you know, and doesn't want to, like, you know, kind of hold out until a little closer to E3, they'll get ahead of those leaks because those
they're just seeding ground to Sony if they let it go for too long.
Yeah.
So if they have such similar architecture, will that avoid the problems that we saw this generation where a lot of times developers had a harder time developing for PS3, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, the cell architecture was you know, proprietary. It was very difficult for developers to port their stuff over. Mm. And, you know, is just technologically really difficult just to understand from a developer perspective in general. So, you know, by unifying it and standardizing it between, you know, the two platforms, and even by extension the Wii U, which uses the same graphics technology, like, or at least the same brand and category, they'll make it, like, basically you can have games scaled down to pretty much any of the consoles with varying degrees of...
And that'll make developers really happy, because that'll help with streamline development costs. They don't have to have a separate PS3 team that's like, all right, now we have to figure out how to get our Madden engine to work on Cell. It'll just be all one thing.
Well, and it almost seems like the console industry had, like, a concerted effort, because, like, they realized that, you know, platforms like iOS and Android are really kind of taking up a huge part of the gaming market now. They're, like, slowly but surely kind of coming up and is really regarded as the big threat to consoles. You know, by making it easier and cheaper for developers to do it, they ensure to some degree that, you know, more developers will be inclined to develop for all the platforms and thus help the entire industry.
We're one step closer to the singular Sony soft console.
Maybe
in another 8 years.
Yeah, no Nintendo though. They're out.
I was trying to come up with what the name would be if you added Nintendo to it, but I couldn't. So we're hearing lots of rumors now about the console. One of the biggest ones is about the new controller. Mm. So we're hearing that they might sort of scrap the DualShock design?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Edge had the rumor about the controller will somewhat be the same, but they're removing, like, the middle part of it where the PlayStation button is and the start and select and to put, like, some sort of screen there.
Like
a touch pad.
Yeah,
right?
Not a touch screen, a touch pad. Which is strange. You know, there was word about the share button and all these things. It seems like they want to make it somewhat ubiquitous with social networking and stuff like that, allowing people to share their videos. It's actually great marketing for them if you're able to just share anything you do. I mean, it could be bad marketing too, I guess, if the game is bad. So we're hearing things. I think they'd be foolish to abandon the form factor of the DualShock completely because people that play PlayStation like it. And it's been the same since 1994 and really the same in terms of DualShock since 98, 99. So I think that they'd be foolish to abandon that now. That's kind of like their calling card. But they could do something to it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, they could do something to it. I understand people like the Xbox controller sticks and the triggers and stuff like that. They could mess with those things, but I would expect it to look 90% the same if I was a betting man.
Oh, I really like the idea of the share button. So rumors that we're hearing are that the system might just always be recording the last 15 minutes of activity, and that with a button that you can, you know, share that online. Makes total sense. YouTube came up during this generation of games. The Let's Play video is, you know, a very popular, you know, thing that people do and watch. So
even on IGN.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So just that would just make it easier than ever for people to share their gameplay videos.
Yeah, online. I mean, you look at some of what Sony's been doing, like, you know, like Gaikai. They acquired Gaikai, the streaming cloud service. Which is a lot like OnLive. It never got to that kind of consumer-facing level where you could, like, it's its own branded service that you could go buy a box for. Like, their whole angle from the very beginning was to support other devices. So, like, they had partnerships with LG or Samsung, where they would allow you to, like, play console-quality games on your TV using, like, they were basically like a back-end service. So Sony's got them now. We don't know what they're doing with them, and they haven't been able to say. Like, so, I mean, it's possible that, you know, like, kind of cloud... you know, video recording and stuff could be a factor in terms of, like, Gaikai. But also you could look at stuff like, you know, the rumors that Steam, like, or Valve is, you know, producing, like, a kind of a wireless streaming option where you can, like, access your games from, like, in your living room, like, where it's, like, kind of this cloud-based thing, or even kind of local streaming. You know, Sony could be pursuing something like that where you can actually, like, play a full PlayStation 4 quality game on your Vita with a Wi-Fi connection. Like, you know, there's all these potential options for, like, the kind of cloud stuff that they could get from Gaikai.
Well, and what's interesting is that, you know, we're hearing that these two consoles, the Xbox and the PlayStation, are so similar. Even this share button functionality, while we haven't heard anything to that exact effect with the next Xbox, recording the last 15 minutes of what you're doing on PS4, that's DVR functionality. Mm-hmm. And we've heard a lot about Microsoft maybe doing DVR-like things. And really getting into the living room with the next Xbox. So yet another potential similarity between these two things.
Yeah, I mean, this year is going to be the war for the living room. Like, everybody wants to, you know, replace cable boxes and satellite, you know, boxes. They want to be able to, instead of just like streaming services like Netflix, actually provide live broadcasts, you know, kind of streaming or...
Well, and what's interesting is that's Microsoft, that's been their goal from day one.
Yeah.
Publicly, they said when the Xbox started, like they knew they were going to take a bath on Xbox One just to get a foothold in the living room. But they said from day one, we want to take over the living room. And the Xbox One was the foot in the door. The 360 has been largely successful, and they've dabbled in that with like Sky over in the UK. Mm-hmm. It sort of is kind of a cable box in parts of Europe. And now, yeah, the next Xbox could be the finale.
And the PlayStation 3 in Japan has the DVR adapter.
It's called the Nasne or something.
Yeah.
And the program is called Torn, I think, something like that. Yeah. So I think there's like issues with cable providers and stuff And they're also like testing, I think, this technology. I mean, that's kind of the thing is that with the new announce, you can kind of look back at some of the technology and even look at the Vita and be like, now you kind of understand more about what they're doing. That maybe they're not, I've been saying this for a long time, that they're not concerned about the Vita because it has something to do with PS4. That they would be much more concerned about this thing like tanking, basically, except for the fact that they might give you another reason to buy one and they're just not worried about it, you know? Or they're just putting on their good corporate face, but.
What would that reason be?
I think Scott touched on it. I think that if you could, if the processing was done on the PlayStation 4 but streamed to like over cloud, like wirelessly or whatever, access kind of the same files with the Vita, then you could play those games on your Vita.
Like the Wii U gamepad,
right.
Essentially.
Mm-hmm. And to even say like that there would be bundles where the Vita came with the PlayStation 4, it just seems like that would make a lot more sense and that they kind of put this thing out to see how it would do. And that they're just not super concerned about it because they'll give you at least another reason.
And snag the money from the early adopters in the process.
So I think, you know, I don't know, it's interesting to see what happens. I mean, the other interesting rumor I thought was that it'll be out by the end of the year here and in Japan, but not in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Which is the biggest market for PS3, right?
Yeah, PlayStation is most popular. Yeah, it's most popular in Europe and Japan too, but it seems like so they want to get out in their home territory and then in the biggest market.
And that opens the door for Microsoft, if they can get a full global launch this holiday, to maybe gain some lost ground back in Europe.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. It would be strange. I mean, Wii U did the same thing, I think, with their staggered launch. To me, it says that they're going to have supply problems, not necessarily in getting these systems made, but that they anticipate that the system might actually be really popular. And obviously, they want to get it out in Japan first. The United States is the biggest could-be market for them. So it would be cool to get it out globally. But that I thought that was the most interesting rumor I read, was that they're not planning a global release.
Like the letting Microsoft go first with the Xbox 360 was a disaster for Sony and the PS3. They had a year head start, and then they totally botched their own launch. It was way overpriced. And
the bravado was... You're not going to see that kind of bravado from them.
Well, that's the thing. The success of the 360, looking back on it, was really as much about Sony's effing up as it was about what Microsoft did right.
Sure. I think Microsoft got lucky.
Yeah, and to the point about supply and like production, I think these systems are going to be more powerful like than anything we've seen before, obviously. But like I think that in terms of like contextually, like, you know, you look back at like the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3, like they were, you know, more powerful than the previous consoles, but within the global market of like PC stuff, like it was like obviously really, really like low-end hardware. I think these systems are going to be a much more kind of mid-range to like upper range in terms of performance. So these are going to be really expensive consoles to produce, and it's going, you know, their volume is going to be impacted by how complex they are. So I think, you know, that the supply is definitely going to be an issue, not just because of demand, but because of just the complexity of the device.
Well, particularly, I'm sure both Microsoft and Sony are going to be pushing to the very last second before they lock in their hardware and actually start manufacturing. So that could certainly contribute to supply issues as well.
And I think, you know, the power thing, you know, everyone like, you know, is against the idea, like no one cares about power. But I think what people are failing to recognize is that power isn't just about graphics and like, you know, like, you know, visual fidelity and experience. Like it's about scalability, like, you know, long-term evolution. Like they've hit a wall with the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. There's only so much they can do with the hardware that they've developed, but like they've evolved it as widely as they can. You know, the Xbox looks completely different today in terms of the like software experience and the entertainment options that it offers. Like by making it more powerful now and subsequently more expensive, they're allowing themselves to really kind of evolve these things rapidly and extensively over time. Like the PlayStation 4 we see in February and later this year will not be the like same device we'll see in like 4 years.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the 360 circa November 2005 is in every way, shape, and form, it's almost like a new console now.
Yeah.
Both even the physical design of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks totally different. Mm-hmm. Going back to that possible PS4 controller, if they remove the select and start buttons and the PS button and replace it with a touchpad, what seems weird about that is that that's not a big area. That's like,
no, it's
like
very, this big. Very tiny. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think that rumor is strange. Like, I believe that they're gonna do something to that controller. But like I said, like, I think they learned from the boomerang with the PS3 that people didn't want it. That it's weird that the...
What's the boomerang?
The boomerang remember? Controller. The PlayStation 3 was announced with a totally different controller.
Oh, that's right.
And it was like outrageous.
It was an instant internet meme.
I totally forgot about that.
It was outrageous.
Phallic.
That is their call. I mean, that controller is their calling card. Like, yeah. It really is.
It is. Yeah.
And I don't think that they want to mess with that. I think it would be a really huge blunder to mess
with
that
And really, why... Why up? I mean, the controller, a new controller already costs $50. Why increase the cost of the controller with a touchpad?
Yeah. Well, and I think the core. I think what we'll inevitably find is that people are misinterpreting the term touchpad. Like you think of touchpad, you think of like there was comparisons to the PlayStation Vita where it's kind of like just this flat surface, but like it could just be a touch sensitive button. You know, like we've seen. Was it the text communicator for the you plug into the DualShock Now? Like. Mm-hmm. It's like that's touch sensitive on the top where you can like use it as a cursor. Like there could be physical buttons on it, but it could also act as like a touchpad. So there's any like the concept of like touchpad controller is like it could mean any number of different things, and it may not exactly mean the doing away of like physical buttons in the center there.
Sony does hypothetically employ people smarter than us to make these things and make these decisions.
Yeah.
Well, the event is on February 20th. Presumably, a lot of our questions will be answered then. But Colin, I know you'll be working diligently leading up to the event, and anything that you discover, you will obviously share with us.
Yeah, any vacation plans you had for the next 30 days got canceled.
Yeah. No, we're gonna have plenty of stuff on IGN. A lot of the stuff we haven't talked about software at all too. We just did Podcast Beyond, an emergency episode. It's not really much of an emergency, Yeah, I think we're gonna be talking a lot about hypotheticals with software too, third party and first party. We don't know what 9 or 10 of the Sony studios are doing. I think we're gonna learn that real soon too. So there's a lot for PlayStation gamers to be excited about, and in turn Microsoft, Xbox.
It's an exciting time in general. I am very excited right now.
I can't wait to pre-order PS4.
For $900.
Yeah, day one. Worst case, profiteering.
eBay. True. We'll be talking a lot more about the future of video games right here on IGN GameScoop very soon. Welcome back to GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This is Justin Davis.
Rap.
That's Mitch Dyer, who is celebrating his one-year anniversary here in the IGN office.
1 year.
And this is Colin Moriarty.
Hello.
Gentlemen, we are on the precipice of a next generation of consoles. Announcements are imminent.
Indeed.
And we're hearing rumors now that the next Xbox, be it called the 720, the Durango, or just Xbox.
Can we start calling it the Xbox Banana Backflips?
Nope. You cannot. Okay. Whatever it's called, we are hearing a rumor that it will require a constant internet connection. It will always have to be online. Obviously, if this is true, it will prove controversial. For that reason, I find it a little hard to believe. The rumor comes from Edge, which,
it's a reputable site.
It is a reputable site, but they just list an anonymous source telling them that. But there would be such backlash, I would just be really surprised if Microsoft did that with their next console.
Right, like for me, I feel like it's highly unlikely because it's such an alienating thing to do, to say you have to have the internet, you have to be connected to the internet to play single player games, to play anything. Now, on the Xbox 360, obviously Xbox Live is a huge component of it, and we've seen various forms of multiplayer integrate Xbox Live in different ways, whether it's with online passes or different vouchers that come in the box or things you pay for to access different components of multiplayer. All that stuff, I guess, makes sense in the context of, hey, I'm online, I'm playing a multiplayer game. If you want to play a single-player game, like if I want to play Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, if I want to play Dead Space 3 on my Xbox, I can do that. I don't need an internet connection to do that. And I can enjoy those games totally as pure single-player experiences. I feel like it is nearly impossible that Microsoft would say, no, you cannot do that anymore with this new console. You can't play Halo 5's campaign unless you are connected to the internet.
I wonder why, like what would even be the reasoning for it?
I have no idea. Edge's story says that because of the the always online internet connection. Therefore, used games will not be usable on these platforms or on this specific Xbox. I don't know where that, what the connection is there. It seems like a bit of a leap.
Well, I mean, that's one answer to the question of why.
Sure, but that's like
the,
that's
one answer to the question why is, you know, on, always online or forcing online is a form of DRM, you know,
yep,
pretty
verifying
strong.
Verifying that you have a disc, that you have a legit copy of a game, that it's new, that you paid for it.
Yeah, that it's, yeah, so it locks out used copies.
Yeah.
Justin, you were saying earlier that you didn't think it was that bad a deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'm coming around on this topic. My thoughts, my stance on this topic is evolving over time, and I think even on a previous Game Scoop, I was very against, you know, not being able to sell used games. But sort of the realization of the epiphany that I had is that my two favorite platforms for, you know, buying and consuming video game content right now are Steam and the App Store. Mm. And those are two platforms that already lock out used games, and I don't even think about it. You know, they've been that way since day one. You know, you're not actually buying a game, you're buying a license to play the game, and you can't resell it. And that doesn't bother me on those platforms, but for some reason, you know, on an Xbox or on a PlayStation, that idea seems much more abhorrent, I guess.
This rumor came hand in hand with the another rumor that, hey, Xbox is going to have 50 gigabyte Blu-rays. That's what they're going to put their games on. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously that says, hey, there will be retail releases. So when Halo 5 comes out for Xbox 720 or whatever, we're going to have a retail release, presumably a digital release. If it was digital only, I could understand needing the internet. Because if it was the only way you could acquire the games was to be connected, then obviously you have a connection that would let you stay connected to keep playing games. That was really weird way to phrase all that, but I hope we got there.
There's all kinds of levels of always online. Like Steam is a platform that is always online. You know, it's an online digital distribution platform, but you can play Steam games offline. Yep. You know, and sometimes there's some hoops you have to jump through.
Yeah, you have to like specifically deactivate or activate on the offline mode on individual games.
And so things, you know, evolve over time. You know, a lot of Steam games require you, you know, day one activation. You need to activate it once and then you can play it offline. The Xbox might have something like that. I mean, we just don't really know at this point. I'm okay with it for that reason, I think. I don't know. It doesn't really bother me so much. You know, the point that I made earlier is that an Xbox sucks if it's not online.
Like, I totally disagree. Completely disagree. There are so many amazing single-player experiences that you could buy an Xbox and just have a power cable and a component cable and a controller, and you could get an enormous amount of enjoyment out of just buying single-player games.
For me, playing Xbox is all about signing in, seeing who else
who's
online, seeing what they're playing, what they're watching, checking out something to watch on Hulu, you know, watching an episode of Parks and Rec on Hulu, then jumping over to play a game. Maybe checking over my friends' leaderboards on the game. Has anyone beat my score? You know, that's what playing Xbox is to me.
Yeah.
So I agree with Justin that not ever taking your Xbox online seems really weird to me.
Sure.
But I realize that maybe, you know, half of the users out there, maybe more, actually don't.
So, I mean, it's a better experience. It's a much better experience.
It's 100% true.
Xbox Live is baked into the experience, my personal Xbox experience, to such a degree that I would never, you know, I would get significantly less value from that platform if it was not connected to the internet.
But when Xbox Live goes down, like when there's maintenance, it's not like you can't access the platform anymore. So looking ahead, if Xbox Live goes down on the Xbox 720, suddenly nobody is allowed to play games, if this online thing is true. If you need to be connected and you can't connect, they've bricked your system. It's a useless box.
It's true.
That sucks.
Yeah, that's why I find it hard to believe. What does Colin Moriarty think about all this?
You look deep in thought.
I mean, I'm of two minds of it. I kind of agree with Justin that it's not really a big deal, but it ignores a key infrastructure problem in the United States specifically, which is Xbox's biggest market, in which if you, you know, I feel like, you know, we live on the coast, we live in a city, we're kind of detached from the reality of most of the country, which is that they do not have cable, like steady cable access. And if only to appeal to everyone, because I would say that a lot of people that don't connect their Xboxes can't. It's not that they don't want to. So people still use dial-up in this country, a lot of people. You know, people still have DSL that is unsteady, a lot of people in this country do. And it's not because, you know, we don't have an incredible amount of wealth as a country or whatever we do, it's because the country's huge and there are a lot of people living in rural areas and it's hard to get a steady cable connection in those places. But at the same time, I was talking to Ryan McCaffrey about this today, I wouldn't be surprised if this was true, even though I don't think they're going to do it. I wouldn't be surprised simply because they want you to be connected so that you spend more money. on the, like, there's a lot of different marketing reasons to do this. If you're online, then you're browsing, you know, there's this service, you pay a little bit of money for this, there's a game here. It's opening you up to this whole ecosystem that I don't think a lot of people even think about. I don't think a lot of people still think about consoles as you go into a store, you buy a game, you put the game in, you play the game. But that's really not what it is anymore. There's
Xbox is a marketplace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, so giving people access to that, forcing them in to the marketplace and being like, you have to engage in the marketplace and maybe have something like Steam where you could play it offline, but maybe you have to connect every so often, whatever. I wouldn't be surprised, but there are huge infrastructure problems in the United States. Not in most European countries, not in Japan, but definitely in the United States where something like that would be detrimental to pushing units out the door.
Like, so much of what I do at home, maybe everything aside from eating, involves the internet. Either I'm surfing.
You don't eat online?
No.
You don't live stream your dinner?
I'm watching YouTube videos, I'm streaming a movie to Netflix. So if my internet, you know, went down, if Comcast went down, the one thing that I can do that's digital entertainment, I could still play a game on my Xbox, right? So, like, it would be so weird if I just couldn't do that now, you know, going forward with the next console.
Next GameScoop, let's bring dinner. Let's just eat on GameScoop.
Eating?
We can just start.
Just 30 minutes of that.
Yeah.
I generally think any show where we expect people to, like, listen and watch us talk, we don't want to have food in our mouths. But that's just my...
Just saying, if you want to be all the way online, Damon.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, I think from a business perspective, you know, people are howling about, you know, used game sales being locked out, but people love Steam to death. Yeah. That's a platform that doesn't allow used game sales.
I saw a comment that said, if this is true, guess I'm buying a Steam box.
Yeah, and it's like,
so you'll buy
totally
all, so you'll buy all new games?
Exactly.
I mean, but Steam is the example of there being no used games, and so there's price parity, you know, and
this is what I'm saying, like, yeah. There's a certain, you know, Colin, you were talking about a guy you were interacting with on Twitter who said that every single, you know, his entire games library is used games.
Oh, so sad.
You know, Sony and developers and publishers got $0 from him. You know, he owns dozens of games.
Well, he's a net negative on Sony.
Yeah, and so...
Was he proud of this?
Yeah, well, he was... I don't know if he seemed like he was...
He's just stating, you know, a fact, right? Yeah. Like, I only buy used games. And so there is a significant chunk of the audience that, you know, look, I will not buy Saints Row for more than $5 or $10. I won't do it, right? And so... That, you know, THQ has a decision to make. They can make $0 from that person and let them go buy the game used, or, you know, once or twice a year they can knock it down to $10 on Steam, and then they get to capture that customer. And that's really the flip side of this used games argument. That's why, that's the second half of what I was saying earlier, where, you know, the App Store and Steam don't bother me at all for, you know, some of their practices that might bother me on Xbox and PlayStation, because they understand, you know, Steam games get knocked down to $2.50 or $5.
Sony's adopting this in some ways with Plus, right? Yeah. Like, we see every month someone, like, Plus users get a free game or two. They get discounts on a bunch of new releases.
You could just have Plus never buy a game and be yeah, pretty satisfied with, yeah, what you're getting. I mean, I think that's the point, is that guy on Twitter, Sony doesn't care about that guy. And in fact, if that guy didn't buy a PlayStation, they'd probably prefer it, because, you know, they don't make any money on hardware. They make money on software. And if you're connecting to games where there are server costs and you're doing all these things on their network and you're not buying anything from them, then they don't want you. And so I don't think that they're scared of being like, well, you, the used game guy, might not want to buy our next PlayStation, but guess what? We didn't make a goddamn dollar on him in 7 years, so who, yeah, cares? You know, I think that they're, you know, there's a few things to think about apart from the infrastructure and all these things. Are both companies going to do it? We've heard rumors about both. If one is certain that the other is going to do it, then they will both do it.
It can't be just one.
And it's an elegant, and like I said this morning, it's an elegant solution. Because there's no way out. Because PC has been doing this for years. You can't do it on your tablet or your iPhone. You can't buy used games. And now the HD twins and the next gen, you cannot buy used games. So there is no solution. So if one is certain the other is going to do it, and who knows how the hell they'd ever be certain about that, then they're going to do it. You know, yeah, and I mean, because there's no net negative. If one does it and the other doesn't,
yeah,
that's bad.
People, yeah, will trade, I've said on GameScoop before that people will trade quality for convenience. People will also trade, you know, some of their rights as a consumer for convenience. Yeah. You know, I'll download a game, you know, you can download Xbox 360 games right now in Wii games, and, you know, I'm sitting on my couch, I want to buy this game, I'll pay it and download it, then I can't resell that game, you know, right? I don't have a disc that I can then turn into cash later on, but that's more convenient for me, so I'll do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, but this is...
People trade almost anything for convenience.
Exactly, and that's what I've been saying for a long time, because, you know, I'm not against used games on a moral level. I just think that it's silly if you want the industry to prosper, to continue to like, propagate used game sales, simply because, you know, some may argue the publisher had already been paid for that game, and that's true because the game was already in the wild, but if you were going to buy it anyway, then they would have sold it again. So it sends mixed signals to developers, and I think that, A, the publishers would be right on board with this. I think the only thing that Sony would be afraid of isolating, or Microsoft would be afraid of isolating, are their retail partners who they rely on to sell consoles. And they have to think about whether it even is relevant. And McCaffrey made a really interesting argument today that Microsoft and Sony might be willing to take a hit. you know, quote unquote, for 2 or 3 years, considering these consoles will last maybe a decade.
Right. Right.
In order to like just say like there is no solution, like this is the reality of the situation. Like we make these games and we control the means by which you get them. And if you don't want them, you can go to another marketplace. But here's the thing: the other markets are all the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's coming to the reality of the PC market that they've been doing for years. Steam is a great example of a system that creates price parity between games that were more expensive because there's a competitive marketplace now. There are no used games, they're all new, and you have to compete to sell your wares. And I think what people don't realize, and I've said it many times, is yes, it is true, indisputable. Games are cheaper in real money than they've ever been, and they are more expensive to make than they've ever been. And if you make a competitive marketplace where people have to compete and not everything's $60 or $10 and it meets somewhere in the middle, more games get sold, more money's made, we get more games, everyone's happy. Mm-hmm. And I think that this kind of situation is gonna facilitate that. But whether we're, you know, this ignores another good point, Damon, which is the used game sales thing will solve itself if they let it. And so, because this is the last system we'll get before it's solid state completely and we don't deal with discs anymore.
Digital only.
It will deal with it itself. And so the question is, are they patient enough to let it do it, or are they just ready to do it?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, whether this happens now or whether it happens in the future, it's going to happen, right? It's just a matter of how fast is it going to happen.
Yeah, used games are done.
Physical media, like, if you want to talk about, like, when we all have kids, you know, and they're like, oh, man, games came on discs and movies came on discs, like, that's going to be the silly thing, right? Like, you know, the world is a digital place. Like,
yeah, I mean, that is inevitable. I think the idea that your console has to be connected online is more the controversial point.
I just go back to it doesn't really bother me because it's such a higher quality experience. Like, you know, I think about a game like Geometry Wars that without those leaderboards, like, I would not have enjoyed that game in the way that I did. And I think about, you know, even single player games, I feel like are more enjoyable if you can enjoy them in like a passively multiplayer way. Like, you can, you know, share high scores and trade things back and forth. The recent Need for Speed Most Wanted is a good example.
Yeah, well.
That game doesn't really have, well, it does have traditional multiplayer, but, you know, the way that I played that game multiplayer was, you know, you just, these notifications pop up that you're doing a single player race, but you did it faster and more efficiently and set a new, you know, speed camera record than somebody else, and then that update gets pushed to them. SSX is another really good example
of
that.
Well, and as games start integrating marketplaces within the game, like with Dead Space 3, for example, like you could play that game single player online, but still have access to this wealth of content within the digital marketplace. So this goes to Colin's point of developers and publishers wanting to drive people in the game to keep spending money.
So it doesn't necessarily only need to be a monetary concern. It can be a game design concern as well. If you know when you're designing your game, everyone is going to be connected when you play that game, you can do cool shit. From a design perspective, like EA did with SSX.
I guess so. And like a game like the like Need for Speed that is so much built around that communal online experience, the people that are playing offline are kind of missing the entire game. So I guess it would solve that problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of you know, passively multiplayer games in that way where you're not playing, you know, directly head to head, but it's all asynchronous. And
watching that little dude in Trials at the top of my screen, knowing that Damon is that much farther ahead of me is
that's another
huge motivator.
That's another great example.
I was trying to think of another media device that does require an online, a constant connection. That we have now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anyway, but I don't know of any. I mean, that's an example a lot of people use, and just in the sense that, like, what else makes you do this? You can sell your car, you can do all these things. That's true. That's completely true. I'm not principally against, like, used games. Like, you know, it's just, there's an economic reality to the decisions you're making. Like, the game companies have not gotten into selling used games like, say, the car companies have.
That's because what I was going to say.
When the car companies were mad about used game sales, they just started selling used cars. And there's no option for the developers to use that.
Game developers made the choice to run away from used game sales, not run towards it. You know, Activision could have been buying their own games back and reselling them and having, you know, like a model like the car companies do, and they chose not to, so... Mm.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's just, it's inevitable. Like Justin said, it's inevitable. Used games will not exist in a few years. So it's a matter of like how we get to that point. Maybe the most consumer-friendly way to get to that point is to just let the system do it itself. But online, like online-only mode suggests to me, like, they want to funnel you and they want you to spend money, but the only reason you would really do that is to make sure used games are not being used or sold. But they could also do it with an online pass kind of system where it's just a pass for the game. You know, it's just like, you could still buy the disc, but you have a pass. Instead of unlocking the online mode, it just unlocks everything.
Yeah. I mean, that convenience can also help with piracy. I mean, it doesn't need to be, it's easy to sort of picture this dark future where, you know, it's always on DRM and blah, 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 but it doesn't need to be that way. Like,
the world's in ruins.
So it's like you're painting a picture of my current, you know, Xbox experience now as a dark future.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I mean, people will, like, the detractors are the people that are worried will, that's sure. the argument that they'll sure. make, right? And it doesn't need to be that way. Like the bright future, the upside of that is I think we will see steeper sales. I think people figure out that, yeah, like I said, if someone buys Saints Row for $5 on Steam, like, you know, they didn't lose, you know, THQ didn't lose $55 on that. That's a person that, you know, that's the ceiling, that's what they were willing to spend.
Just an extra $5 that they wouldn't have made before.
You know, yeah, right. So in, you know, 12 months or 18 months or however it works out, you know, then they'll capture that consumer that they, you know, that they wouldn't have reached before. And that's a sale that would have gone to, you know, on Craigslist in the past, and now it won't. So,
well, hopefully we won't have to wait too much longer to find out about all this. The PS4 is all but surely being announced on
yeah, we'll be there
the 20th.
On February 20th, and we'll hopefully have some answers to some of these questions, at least on Sony's side. I just want to encourage Damon, I mean, people to, you know, I say it all the time, say it on podcasts, be honest, say it on Twitter all the time, whatever. If you're displeased with the practices of a company or whatever, if you don't want microtransactions, if you don't want a solid state system, if you don't want something that's online only, like, the only way companies will understand what you're saying is if you don't pay them. And, like, people have to be, like, very, you know, like, the anti-online pass thing failed. The anti-day one DLC thing failed. Because people aren't, you can say everything you want on a message board, but it doesn't matter. Because yeah. if the
when
money
they see
goes,
that sale yeah, for that software, that's all they care
that's
about.
That's all you're speaking about. So, like, just with these next systems, if you're that upset about the things that they might or might not do because we don't know, then just don't buy them, because that will send the only signal that matters yeah. to these guys. We can go round and round and round about all this stuff, but that's all they care about.
Yes. So, there's a famous screenshot of Modern Warfare 2 on Steam where, you know, thousands of people joined a Boycott Modern Warfare 2 yeah. Steam group because they weren't allowing, I think it was custom servers or, you know, some feature was turned off. Then when the game launched, you know, I think like 95% of the people in that boycott group were in playing the game. You know, they bought the game and were still playing
yeah, it. Yeah, and so a company like, you know, like Activision will just be like, you know, you don't like online passes, this is a very big, daring thing we're going to do with our first game. Oh, it didn't affect the game sales at all. In fact, we're making more money on used game sales because they have to buy it to play the game. We'll keep doing it. The only thing they care about is the bottom line, I mean, because they're a business.
They're going to keep trying to curb those sales, too. Mm-hmm. They're going to do whatever they can to prevent you from selling your games, from buying used games. And, I mean, this is a logical next step. It's probably going to make a lot of people very mad, but
yeah,
I mean, I guess
hopefully,
we'll see.
Hopefully we see, you know, bigger, steeper discounts to offset some of that. That's what I'm hoping.
Oh, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think with the new PlayStation Network, the new Xbox Live stuff, and with Steam, you're going to see so many, the games are going to get cheaper.
It's like Steam. Like, Steam is great about that.
Yep.
There's crazy deals on amazing games in Steam. I think that's what the marketplace on the new consoles will look like, too. Mm-hmm.
This problem will solve itself, I think.
Sure. Thanks, guys. These are very interesting times for video games. We'll continue talking about them right here on GameScoop. Welcome back to GameScoop, everybody. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined today by Greg Miller,
yo,
Ryan McCaffrey, and Rich George.
Hello.
Back in the day, exclusives were the most important part of a console's library. They were the selling point of the console. I had to have both the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis because they both had very different games.
God forbid you missed Toe Jam and Earl.
I know.
You didn't, did you? You had to have it.
You had to.
Gotta get Genesis.
Today, the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 libraries are very similar. So yeah. similar, I would argue that probably most people probably don't need to own both of those systems. Nintendo is the exception. They're still very
yeah.
different. yeah. But so that leads us to the question today. You know, as we're new consoles are imminent, do exclusives still matter?
The answer is, Damon, and we can end this right afterwards. Okay. Is yes. But they're on the cusp of being completely irrelevant. They still
matter now.
They still have a little yeah. bit of relevancy, but it's about to be just like,
so
who the hell cares?
Explain yourself.
The example I always go to, and I was talking about it yesterday, right, is the fact that Sony goes out of their way to have these exclusives, right? They own all these first-party studios that can only make games for them. Uncharted, Last of Us, that's the same studio, that doesn't really count. But Killzone, you see where I'm driving at. They have all these titles, God of War, that are theirs. Mm-hmm. Only we have these, and we're putting them out all the time. And last year, they put out an awesome exclusive, or a great exclusive, about every month, and most of them did not sell. Yeah, it didn't put PlayStation light years ahead of Xbox.
Is that a marketing problem, though, Greg? Because you look at, you know, Microsoft has this almost the polar opposite strategy
right.
of, okay, we're all about our key pillars. Our Fable, which, okay, last year was the weird spin-off Kinect game that didn't go anywhere, but Forza, which does well in sort of a fairly niche community. I mean, there's the Forza Gran Turismo debate, which is a whole other show, but And then it's Gears and Halo. And, you know, with Halo, Microsoft created a massive event out of Halo that transcended time and space. And they've done that with the past Gears games, too. And as good as Uncharted is and as good as those PlayStation games are, I mean, Heavy Rain, PlayStation All-Stars this year, you didn't see it everywhere. It doesn't seem like they really did the push.
No, that's what Microsoft dominates at. Microsoft is awesome at marketing their games. And we go see movies all the time because we're best friends. Mm-hmm. And you get there and we see the Gears trailer. Yeah. We see these trailers for these huge games. People know just like, not at all first-party exclusive, I'm aware, but Homefront, right? Homefront was this push that like, everyone knew about Homefront. Even if you weren't into video games, you saw these Homefront ads everywhere and eventually figured out it was a video game that you didn't want
to
play.
Right. What's interesting to me is like these exclusives seem almost like marketing machines of themselves, not so much for the games, but it's just like that's what distinguishes PlayStation from Xbox for me. It's just like, oh, that's the Uncharted console and this is the Halo console. But then all I really want to buy are the third-party games for that particular environment. Which is sort of interesting. I mean, increasingly it just feels like, you know, you're buying it for the services and the sort of like who you know that's on those consoles.
Well, that's exactly right. You play Xbox because your friends play on Xbox and you come to Xbox for Live, and that's why, I mean, that's Microsoft's Trojan horse for this next gen console that's probably coming this fall is, you know, the PlayStation 4, you know, the rumors are it might be a bit more powerful than the Durango is, but people are going to stick with Xbox because they're not going to want to give up their gamer score.
My Call of Duty clan is there.
Yep, your buddies and your achievements.
It's also about hardware, right? I just prefer the Xbox controller. So that's what, you know, makes me more of an Xbox gamer today, not the game library.
I mean, I feel like Microsoft was very smart and they realized many, many years ago that services were going to dominate the industry more than actually the content, and that financially, you have to release as wide as possible. And we just saw that happen twice this week with Ninja Gaiden Razor's Edge and Rayman Legends, where third-party publishers are saying, like, it does not make sense to limit this game, which costs millions and millions of dollars, to one platform with an install base of whatever, better to serve all 150 million plus, you know. Why it doesn't make any sense if you're a third publisher. Why would you limit yourself?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can go on my friends list and lots of people's friend list at any time and see probably at least a third of them playing Netflix. Even though you can get Netflix on any device now, you can get it on the Wii, you can get it on the PS3, Microsoft was out in front of that and they really positioned it. Oh, you can, your Xbox that's already in your living room hooked up to your big TV, you can just do your Netflix right on that, no problem.
When PlayStation 3 was getting its momentum, when I first started at IGN, people would talk, Peter Dilley would talk about, this is going to be the entertainment hub of your living room. And they talked and talked and talked about it, and Microsoft did it. Microsoft wasn't talking, they were doing it, and they were putting it out there, and they were putting it, so that when you turned on your box, the first thing you saw is Netflix is now available, this is happening, blah, blah.
And Sony was there early when it was DVDs and even a little bit of Blu-rays, that was the service that mattered.
Back in the day, I just bought a PlayStation 2, and I use it as my DVD player.
Right.
And then Microsoft realized that, well, it's actually a little more than just playing some discs, because not as many people buy discs anymore. They want to stream. They want to do all these other things.
Yeah.
So, you know, kudos to Microsoft. They figured it out. So.
Well, now, Nintendo arguably has the strongest lineup of, you know, of exclusive titles.
Sure.
What does it mean for them today?
They do something very different, and you're sort of seeing the results of that with Wii U right now. You know, Nintendo wants to do something very different. They're going down a very different path, but that increasingly is, you know, seemingly alienating them from third parties. Third parties need
again.
Yeah.
For the fourth console in the
world. Yeah. How many times have I read this story? What year is it?
I mean, that's the weird thing is Nintendo is now, you know, unless something remarkably changes, Nintendo is going to have to rely on itself. And it is probably in the best position to rely on itself out of all the first parties.
That's true.
It can rely on itself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when it wants a third-party game or it wants, you know, something from a different developer, they're going to have to go publish it. They're going to have to go make that partnership. It's an interesting strategy. I mean, we'll see. I mean, the question is, can you come up with the quantity of games that you need to sustain a platform with that strategy?
Right.
And remains to be seen. I mean, Wii U is doing okay, not great. It's certainly behind Wii. We obviously saw two third-party exclusives just jump ship just now, and Ninja Gaiden was published by Nintendo in some of the territories. So, you know, does that strategy work? We'll find out. I mean, that's exactly what they're
trying.
Well,
of course, the difference is Sony and Microsoft are two monolithic companies that do a billion different things. Nintendo just makes video games. So if they make
they were profitable.
Yeah, if they make a profit, you know, maybe they don't care.
Yeah, I mean, they showed it with the 3DS. I mean, we saw them do the exact same thing with the 3DS where they struggled and struggled and struggled, and then their own content has started to lead to success. I mean, they took over Japan with the 3DS. It's still the number one selling platform there. It's doing pretty well here.
Yep.
you know, but does that portable strategy apply to a home console, which costs a lot more, you know, to develop a game and takes a lot more time?
I think it does. I think you're going to see the same thing. We already talked about, I mean, the news is out, right, that E3 this year, correct me if I'm wrong, they're showing Zelda, they're showing...
Mario.
Is Smash being shown, or is it just...
Smash? So Smash will be revealed in some sort of state. Mario and Mario Kart will be playable. Yeah. It will get Wind Waker HD, should be there in some form. And then there's the new Zelda that's sort of lurking.
They're
going to
do
there.
Exactly what they did with the 3DS, where they're like, they had this weird, oh, nobody likes our system. Then they showed all these games. Then they were like, price drop, and here are all the games.
Yeah.
And I'm going to... That's and all I'm waiting for.
In.
Totally.
Yeah,
a new Mario Kart? Yes, yeah. I will buy it.
I mean, that's the thing, is like once they start really driving the Smash hype machine, everyone's like, yes, please give me that. And I mean, that's the weird thing about Nintendo, is they think about games differently. They always have for decades. You know, some say that they still say, think the same way as they did 30 years ago, but regardless, they think very differently than everybody else. And that's the blessing and the curse for Nintendo, right? Like,
right.
You buy it for their games because their games are unlike anybody else's, but that means you don't have everything else.
Nintendo has the killer apps. Microsoft literally has the killer apps. Not as much games anymore. It's not necessarily buying it for Halo. You're buying it for Xbox.
So that's what
Live.
I wonder. You know, when these new systems are launched in the fall, what's the selling point?
Yep. This year is going to be fascinating. We were just talking about this last night. Is that what are these systems going to come out and say they do to make people buy them?
Yeah.
Everyone's so happy playing games on their phone right now.
Yeah.
Nobody, graphics aren't enough. You can't come out and show Uncharted 4 or Killzone 4 and be like, look, it's amazing. It's
great. Give me $500.
Awesome. Exactly.
Well, and especially in a transitional year, right? You remember when 360 and PS3 came out, you were kind of like, well, those are good, but I don't really see why I'm buying Perfect Dark Zero. You know, like, what am I doing with this? And so, you know, I think this year is going to be fascinating too, because if you're a third-party publisher, same thing. Are you going to go sit there and develop something just for PS4 and whatever the next Xbox is and just be like, well, I hope they sell enough units that I'll make some money on it? Or are you going to sell it on 360 and PS3 and new Xbox and new PlayStation? It's, you know, scalability.
When you start talking about this and we have this conversation about, like, what are they going to do? And, you know, oh, well, there's this niche market over here. I really see it, what we talk about all the time about when we're talking about we're moving towards a unified platform. And this
Absolutely.
Is the last console cycle. And all these questions and all these topics of conversation point you that way, right? Everything is going to be a niche market. We talk about what is the PlayStation 4 going to do that's going to make us buy it? And like the rumor out that we've heard, right, is that, oh, well, at any time you can pause out and see the last 15 minutes of gameplay and cut it up and send it up to YouTube. And it's like, all right, that's really cool for the kids who like to do that, but like,
what about the rest of
us? A lot of people don't care. The person who just has their 360 to play Call of Duty with their friends is going to look at that and be like, I never played Call of Duty and been like, holy shit.
Yeah, what exactly is that webcaster audience? Like,
exactly.
What's that population look like?
It seems like we're getting, the console gaming is getting more and more insulated as far as like, you know, we're the hardcore gamers and this is what we do.
And it'll still be the software though. Like, you know, Bungie's new game, which is called Destiny, there were those court documents leaked from that lawsuit with Infinity Ward. And apparently, according to those contracts, you know, that game's going to be really leading on next-gen platforms this fall. I expect at E3 that game's going to be the centerpiece of Microsoft's showcase. But it's also going to release on 360 for that giant installed base. But
you can't afford it otherwise. Like,
exactly.
Wow,
but if they
crazy.
Start, you know, and it, with so with a Destiny, with a next-gen Call of Duty, if they, yeah, those games might come out on the current-gen platforms, but if they have additional content, you know, if they have more multiplayer features and maps on the new systems, that's going to, you know, that's going to be like, well, all my buddies are going to, we want to play on those maps, so all right, let's get these consoles.
Yeah, but I mean, we say that and it sounds good, but then remember like Madden, like the Madden 360 that came out, it was just awful. It had like none of the features. It was totally a rush.
Well, but it also came out, everyone had already bought Madden that year because it came out in August, then the system with the new Madden came out in November, so who knows?
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch Microsoft over the past generation because I feel like, and it's very high level, they kept doing very smart things where DLC is coming to this game first. Mm-hmm. This, you know, you're getting these maps first. You're getting this offering first. It was never the game, but it was the life cycle of the game was longer
the
on 360 first, you know. And so, you know, I got my Call of Duty, and if I got it on PS3, I'm sitting there with nothing new to play. And meanwhile, all the guys on Xbox 360 are like, holy crap, I've got new maps.
Yep.
Come over here, guys. Let's play this. And it was just, and it wasn't any one game. It was the repetition of that idea.
Too bad
over
I got
years.
Dead Space Extraction with Dead Space 2 on PS3.
Really interesting stuff. Thanks a lot, guys. What do you guys think about exclusives today? Continue the conversation in the comments, and IGN Game Scoop will be back soon with more video game discussion.
Scoop!
Ah. Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.